The Nothing Train to Nowhere by Sarah Fader. I got on the Nothing Train. It had a sign, but the sign was blank. It was a blank yellow sign that didn't even flash. Still, I got on because it was there. I stepped one sneaker after the other onto the train car. I was wearing my white Converse that day. It was a Wednesday, and I had nowhere to be, so I got on the Nothing Train headed to nowhere. I sat down in the first red seat I saw. An elderly man wearing a black fedora was sitting in the seat beside me. It was a green seat. The seats on the Nothing Train were red, green, red, green, red, green. Stop, go, stop, go. The Nothing Train closed its doors and prepared to leave the station. I knew deep down inside that this train wasn't going where I needed to go, but I didn't care because I needed to get out of where I was. The station was dirty and it was dark outside. I knew there was no way I was going to survive if I stayed there any longer. I didn't have any food left, and the pigeons were starting to look at me funny. There were a lot of pigeons at the station. So I sat on the train and waited. I closed my eyes and relaxed in the hard plastic red seat. The elderly man next to me was reading a newspaper, or at least I think he was. My eyes were closed and I could hear the rustling of papers. I could only assume that he was shuffling through a newspaper. It was crisp and clean the way he shuffled his paper. It would be a long time before I got to nowhere, and I just wanted to sleep. I rearranged my body in several different positions, put my legs against my chest in the seat. It was hard to get comfortable. I was wearing green khaki shorts and a white t-shirt, and the train was severely air-conditioned. It made sense since we were in the middle of the summer, but my legs were as cold as ice. I opened my eyes for a moment and shoved my bare legs under my t-shirt. It was a last-ditch attempt to finagle some warmth. Upon opening my eyes, I glanced over at the elderly man who was immersed in reading his paper. The story he was reading must be exciting, I thought. I looked down at the top of the paper. The date read June 16th, 1899. My heart began to race. Something was wrong here. This train was cursed. The elderly man was oblivious to the window beside him. The train moved quickly, blurring our immediate surroundings. Trees, houses, roads, all looked like a green, red, brown, and gray blur. I began to sweat and tremble. There was no turning back now. The pigeons were gone, and I couldn't remember what color they were. Were they gray or brown? Did they even have eyes? I didn't know because they were long gone. At least they weren't pecking at my toes. I hate that. But they were the only friends I'd known, those disgusting birds, for days, months, maybe a year. I'm not even sure. I'd been at the train station waiting for any train for so long that I'd forgotten what my name was for a while. I renamed myself four times before I decided on Julia. Julia isn't even my name, but I needed a name because this man came by and asked me what my name was. He was asking for directions to the nearest grocery store, and then when I said I didn't know, he asked, "What's your name, sweetheart?" And I could only remember famous people named Julia. Julia Child, Julia Stiles, Julia Roberts. So I told him my name was Julia so he would leave me alone. I looked out the window and my eyes began to throb. I could feel them coming, the tears. The ache in my throat was unbearable. I couldn't speak or breathe. So I coughed instead. I coughed and coughed, and then I sneezed, and then I started to cry. So hard that I couldn't see the blurry tree, rock, and road festival that was out the window. I cried so hard that I could see. I wiped the tear festival from my eyes and took a deep breath in. I could feel the coolness of the artificial train air conditioning on my face, solidifying my tears against my face. I briefly glanced out the window again, only to see that it had become morning. I'd be crying for so long that the next day had happened. There was a deep green path outside with no human beings anywhere, no telling where I was or where I was going. Nothing I knew to be true was true. I didn't even have a name. Julia was something I named myself because I'd forgotten everything about myself. I had no purse, no backpack, no ID. So here I was on this train headed to nowhere. I'd lost myself, and I could figure out how to get her back. All I could do is go. It was time for me to find out who I was, and I figured that nowhere was just as good a place as any to do that. Plus, there were no scheduled trains coming after the train to nowhere. "What are you reading?" I asked the elderly man next to me with a sniff. I had no tissues, so I wiped the snot from my nose on my arm. I wanted to understand why his newspaper was so old. It wasn't even from this century. His hat was black, but covered with a subtle layer of dust. He looked up from his newspaper, turned to me, and locked eyes with me. His eyes were icy blue. His gaze disarmed me, and yet I felt as if I couldn't look away from him. He had frozen me, and I was stuck in my seat looking into his eyes. They transfixed me to the point where I was unable to do anything but stare back and attempt to keep my breathing level. After what seemed like an eternity, the elderly man opened his pursed lips and spoke. "Put the past away," he said, all the while keeping his gaze upon me. The air got colder, my soul felt lonelier, and I knew that I would find the answers when I got to nowhere. How could I put the past away, I wondered. By the time I'd gotten to the dark train station, there wasn't much left of my past. I'd forgotten my real name. I was Julian now. He took all that from me. He ripped me of my innocence. He stole what was once mine, and I forgot my body, my name, my blood type, and where I lived. I can't tell you where I'm from because he took all of it from me, and I will never get it back. But the old man told me to put the past away. I don't have a drawer for my past. Here I was, sitting on this train, headed to nowhere, and there was no past file cabinet. Do they make storage containers for the past? I'd like one of those. I swore I wouldn't tell anyone what happened to me that night in the woods. The good thing is that I can't remember where those woods were, or even if they were real. They were real in my mind when he took everything I had and made it his. I can't remember his face. If only I could remember his face, then I would be able to tell someone. "Tickets, please." The train conductor materialized and stopped my thoughts. He was wearing a blue hat and uniform, but his face was as gray as my mood. I rustled through the pocket of my shorts and found the crumpled green ticket that read "Nowhere" in bold black letters. The conductor was visibly irritated with his pursed lips, as if I was taking forever to give him the ticket. My hand trembled as I handed him the ticket. He didn't seem to notice. "How long will it be till we get to Nowhere?" barked the elderly man in the seat next to me. Some dust flew off his hat.
7 hours, sir," said the conductor.
7 hours to think about what happened to me in those woods. 7 increments. 7 hands, 7 feet. Or was it 1 hand and 7 fingers? I don't know. I can't remember. Remember what happened. I will dig deeper into the caverns of my mind, and I will bring myself back to life. It's not too late. It's too late. I can't remember any of it, I thought as I sat silently, solemnly next to the elderly man on the cool train to Nowhere. 6 hours and 30 minutes left to get to Nowhere. I closed my eyes and tried to remember being in the woods. I breathed in through my nose and out through my mouth, like James, my mindfulness meditation teacher, had taught me. My eyes shot open. I remembered him. James, my meditation teacher. He was the last stop before I walked into those woods. It was a Wednesday evening, and I went to see him before I couldn't remember, but it was 6:35 p.m. I was 5 minutes late to our mindfulness class. I'd been working with James for 4 months. Despite his pleas for me to be punctual to class, I was consistently 5 to 10 minutes late to class. "Louise, you understand that when you come late to class, your chakras are already misaligned. It takes me longer to help you get centered," James said, visibly annoyed with me. "Wait, what did he say?" "He said Louise. That's my name. My name isn't Julia, it's Louise. I know my name." "I'm sorry, James. I'm trying my best. I'm a late person." "Louise, if we're going to help you, punctuality is important. Every moment counts towards your healing." I sighed, irritated at this truth. I knew I needed this course. I wanted to combat my demons, and the only way was to enter into a mindful state. I needed to confront my pain, but it was difficult to sit with it. I didn't want to face myself, but I knew I needed to. Be there, be present, look hurt in the face and acknowledge it. I can't fucking do this, I said, shaking my head. "I'm sorry, I can't." "What?"
James said, his face turning white. Louise, don't say that. Don't say what, James? Stop fucking saying my name like you know me. You don't know me. You don't know anything about me. You have no idea what I've been through. Don't you dare say my name, I shouted, pointing my finger at the small, frail man with a ponytail wearing all white. This language is unnecessary, James said with pursed lips.
You are unnecessary, I yelled. With that, I reached into pocket, grabbed a fistful of money, and threw it at him. James was horrified. His lip quivered and he didn't speak a word. I stormed out of the white room, leaving him behind mystified by my cruelty. I slammed the door and didn't look behind me. I ran to the elevator, tears streaming down my face. I didn't want to remember what had just happened. I rang for the elevator with my pointer finger. I obsessively pressed the button until my finger burned. Are you going up or down? I turned around to find a tall man with sandy blonde hair standing next to me. He was wearing a gray t-shirt with red letters that read, University of Your Mind. I didn't know if that was meant to be facetious. It didn't matter. None of it mattered, including me. I didn't matter. Down, I said. He nodded silently. There's a beautiful trail around here. Have you seen it? He asked me. What? I replied. I said, the woods are beautiful around here. Do you want to go for a walk? No, I said. Yes, you do, he commanded. Okay, I said sullenly. So I followed him into the elevator. University of Your Mind? I asked the blonde man as we rode down in the eerily silent elevator. My face was still flushed from yelling at James and his stupid ponytail. The blonde, blue-eyed man looked at me with an ice-cold gaze and said, What do you think it means? I don't know, I replied slowly. There was something about this man that made me uncomfortable. He looked like he was in his early 20s, but had a boyish face. He looked apathetic and emotionless, yet there was something fascinating about him. I wanted to know more about him. The elevator began to slow and stop. What's your name? I asked the stoic blonde man. Love is a hell you cannot bear, he replied. What? I said, furrowing my brow. My name is not important, he replied. Come with me, he insisted. I had no choice but to follow him. The elevators opened, and we were in the marble lobby of James's building. I want to show you something beautiful, he said, meeting my eyes with his icy blue gaze. Chills entered my body and my eyes and flowed down into me. He reached out his hand and took mine without asking. His skin was cool and mysterious, like him. I didn't even know his name. We walked through the lobby together and out the door. Silently, the mystery man and I walked outside into the cool evening summer. It got cold at night since we lived close to the mountains. The mountains? Was he taking me to the mountains? Promise me, he said, as we walked together on the sidewalk outside of James's office. My hand was in his. Promise you what? I asked. You'll never let go, he said coolly. I was stunned by him and said nothing. I held his hand tighter, pulled by his electricity. He was electric and I had no choice but to listen to him. Together we walked silently off the sidewalk to a dirt trail. There was a woods near James's office. It was filled with Douglas fir trees. The smell was intoxicating, but all I could focus on was the cool feeling of this man's hand on mine. Isn't it beautiful? He asked me as we entered the woods. There were enormous trees surrounding us. It was beautiful, but I couldn't focus. Something was wrong. I couldn't figure it out, but I knew something was profoundly wrong here. Still, I promised him. I promised I wouldn't let go. I kept my hand in his. We walked and walked down the trail. It was beautiful. The smell, the lack of people anywhere. It was all too much to take in. I tried to focus on his hand on mine. I waited for his lead. He turned to me abruptly. We stood together in the deep woods. His icy blue eyes looked upon me. I couldn't speak. Couldn't move. Couldn't live. He took my face in his hands and pushed a piece of my hair aside. I want you to know how beautiful you are, he said. Thank you, I said, not quite knowing how to respond. No, he said firmly. You are beautiful, and I want you to know it. I could feel them starting to come hard and fast. The muscles in my eyes tensed, and I began to cry. Tears flowed out of me freely, soaking my face. I couldn't stop them. There was nothing I could do anymore. I can't stop, I said. I wouldn't want you to, he said. He pulled my face closer to him and kissed me hard on the mouth. Time stopped. The forest was filled with trees and darkness. A cool breeze ran through my body. I felt his tongue in my mouth and his soul run through me. We were one. I was him, and he was me. Together we became a part of each other in that forest. There was nothing I could do to stop it. I wanted to stop it, and yet it wouldn't. He kept giving himself to me fully, and I accepted him through the fear I had inside me. His sandy blonde hair remained in the forefront of my mind. I could smell him, taste him. I knew him, but we had just met. He stopped for a moment and looked me in the eyes. I just want to look at you, he said. Can I do that? He asked. I nodded silently, tears streaming down my face. Where are we? I asked. We are in the Forest of Truth, he answered. And I am in love with you. I smiled, because I knew he was telling the truth. We stood there staring into each other's eyes. His eyes turned from blue to gray to silver to yellow and back to blue again. I know what you're thinking, I said.
You do? He asked. Yes, I replied. You want to be with me in every way. I do, he said. He walked over to me and began to unbutton my shorts. I wanted to be with him, but it was sudden. As he undressed me, he looked into my eyes. This is our truth, and I love you, he said, as his now gray eyes penetrated into mine. I love you too. I have known that my whole life, I replied. I know, I said. What is that? I asked, pointing to the mountain range in the distance. It's our future. I don't understand, I replied. You will in time, he said confidently. I wanted to understand what he meant. He pointed to the mountain range confidently, like he knew what our destiny was. He did know. He was ready for me, and I was ready for him. He turned to me and looked deep into my green eyes. Let me reintroduce myself as a man with a cause, he said. I smiled. He moved closer to me and continued to undress me slowly, carefully, with his fingers and his love. He removed my shorts and tossed them to the side. I felt his chest press into me as he gently pushed me to soft brown dirt. He was above me and I beneath him. I looked into his deep blue eyes as they turned to gray. I could feel him inside me pressing into me. Do you know how much I want you? He asked. How much? I asked. More than I can express, more than you will ever know. I need you, I crave you, I breathe you, I said.
I looked into his eyes and breathed him in. We were one. We were together, and nothing and no one could break that. The universe was right. It listened and it knew that we were meant to be together. The stars were above us and the earth was beneath us, and that day his soul lay inside me. Everything was right. I closed my eyes and let us be one together. When it was over, we lay together, him and I, looking at the stars. I wrapped myself in his arms. He was entirely mine and I was entirely his, and it all made sense. We made sense together, like a grammatically correct sentence. The punctuation was right. The syntax was correct. The letters touched each other correctly, just like we did. He traced the outline of my face with his hand, which automatically made me smile. I love you, I said. And I love you, he replied without hesitation. I moved closer to him. Our naked bodies were entwined. I put my head on his chest and breathed him in. I wanted to remember his smell forever. I wanted to take that smell and put it inside me. I wanted to be that smell. It was so much a part of me. Our sentence would make more and more sense as it grew. Words strung together to become longer, bigger blocks of text. My eyelids became heavier and heavier as I slowly fell into a deep, comfortable sleep on my love's chest. I woke up feeling contented. I didn't want to move. He was still asleep. We were both naked on the dirt, waiting for the right moment to move. He was entirely mine and I was entirely his. The minute I moved, the second I unfroze my body, the moment I became disentangled in his embrace, boom! Lightning struck. I moved. That was the causation. He awoke from his slumber. What happened? He asked. I don't know, I said, startled. The storm had started. I looked to the mountains. They seemed so far. I didn't know where my clothes were. I couldn't find them. Nothing was as it seemed. I rolled over slightly and toward my love.
Hey, I said, reaching to stroke his back. Who are you? He asked, staring straight through me. His eyes were a stark shade of gray. I didn't recognize this color. I'd seen his eyes change several shades, but not to this one. I felt a chill move through me. Part of this was because it was cold outside. The rain had started to come. I moved my legs closer to me. I needed to get warm and fast. What? I asked him. I could feel them start to come. The tears. He didn't remember. He didn't know what we'd just shared. Who are you? He repeated. Louise, I said. Do you remember? I asked as I held my hand over my heart. Don't touch me! Don't ever touch me! He shouted. Who are you? He asked. Nobody, I replied. It didn't matter anymore. He wasn't going to listen to me. I didn't matter to him. It was clear that I needed to get out of there and fast. He looked at me like I was some piece of trash he'd forgotten to throw out. I felt dirty, sick, unwanted. I started to shake. The rain was starting to pour down harder and faster. I couldn't breathe. I needed to move. I pulled my legs closer to me and cried. I couldn't tell the difference between the raindrops and my tears. They were falling fast, hard, and strong. You need to leave, he said. Go. Okay, I said, between the tears and the rain. There was water everywhere. On me, on the ground, everywhere. Forget your name. Forget this happened. Forget me. Forget it all. I will, I said, swallowing my past and tears in one gulp. I quickly located my clothes. Even though they were saturated with rain, I put them on. Green khaki shorts and a t-shirt. I said, go! Why are you still here? Forget this happened! Leave! He yelled. Who are you? I asked. No one, he replied, and smiled. You will never know. I started to cry hard. As the tears rolled down my face, my body shook. I felt naked even though I was fully clothed. I bent my knees as my heart raced. I propelled myself forward and began to run. I ran and ran into the mountains. I felt the rain on my face and the pain in my body. It surged me, pushing me forward toward Nirvana or Hell or Dante's Inferno. Forget it all. Forget your name. I can forget. 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 I stopped to catch my breath. I looked up and there I was, at the top of the most beautiful mountain I'd ever seen. I don't think I'd ever been to the mountains, in fact. I couldn't be sure, because I wasn't sure of anything. I suddenly couldn't remember any of it. Where was I? I didn't know. I didn't know anything. What was my name? I couldn't stop thinking, but I needed to stop. I need to stop it somehow. There were blank thoughts and words and quotations, and somehow I was in the midst of a sentence that had no meaning. I felt them coming again, or
For the first time, I couldn't be sure. The tears came hard and fast and strong, and I realized it wasn't raining anymore. I was crying, but the rain was not falling from the clouds. I collapsed to the ground at the base of the peak of this mountain, the valley beneath me, the sky above me, and my body stationary in the fetal position. There I was. I could see myself from above, disassociated, scattered, broken, confused, and scared. I cried hard tears and waited for the pain to stop, but it just kept coming and coming, and it was relentless. Who am I? I don't know. Where am I? A mountaintop. Where am I going? Nowhere. 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 Then I saw it. It was a big black sign with white letters. Nowhere, it read. It had an arrow pointed to the right. Slowly, I stood up, drenched in tears, dirt, and sweat, and followed that forsaken sign. My heart had fallen out of my chest somewhere along the path, but I couldn't be sure where. I walked blindly toward the sign. It was my destiny. I was headed to nowhere, and there I would find the answers. There my truth would be revealed, because I'd forgotten it all, and it had forgotten me, whoever it was. I knew that it wasn't fair, any of it. I didn't know what it was. I knew that there was an injustice in these fucking tears. I looked down at my knees. They were scraped and bruised, red and worn from fighting, raw from climbing on this mountain. I made it to the peak, and now I had a choice. Did I lay down and die, or did I continue towards nowhere? I walked onward. I wasn't ready to die. Not yet. Not ever. The path to nowhere was winding. It led me down the mountain and deep into the valley below. I was wearing my white Converse, which weren't ideal hiking shoes, but I had to make do with what I had. It was a long trip to nowhere. Apparently. I carefully maneuvered my way down the trail. I didn't want to trip and fall. It was a long way down the mountain, and if I tripped, I wouldn't survive. Slowly, calculated, my movements matched my thought patterns. I didn't know who I was, what my name was, where I was. But I knew where I was going to. Nowhere. After some considerable effort, with sweat dripping down my brow, I reached the bottom of the mountain. I breathed a deep breath in through my nose and released it through my mouth. I made it. I looked up to the top of the enormous overreacting mountain. It peered down at me, cowering over me, haunting me with its gaze. I knew it was time to keep going before it swallowed me whole with its sadness. There was something profoundly sad at the peak of that mountain, but I couldn't quite articulate what that was. The snow was discolored. The clouds above it were an off-color shade of white. The mountain was awfully despondent. I didn't want to be around that anymore. I pushed my exhausted body and mind forward. I walked down the dirt road in front of me. There was a gray mist ahead. It was hard to see, and I didn't have my glasses. I'd lost them somewhere along the way with him. Whoever he was. I didn't know. But he was gone, I thought. I pushed forward through the mist. Through the loss. Through what loss I was, where I was supposed to be going, I couldn't be sure. Along the way, there was a giant oak tree. It was so beautiful. I had to stop. I walked right up to it and hugged it close to my body. I felt the bark touch my breast. It made me angry, that tree. It hurt me. It betrayed me to the core, and I hated it with all my being. I shot backward and punched it with my fists. I kept punching and punching until my fists began to bleed. I started to cry. Tears ran down my face into the blood on my hands, washing away what was unclean, leaving behind the hurt, the sadness, the loss, and the unknown. I hated that fucking tree. I wanted it to die among with the memories that I couldn't recall. I walked onward, following the second sign that I saw. Train station ahead. There it was. I'd been walking for days at this point. I hadn't eaten, hadn't slept, couldn't think of anything else but leaving this place. I followed a pigeon through the mist. She told me to follow her. At least, I think she did. I don't know. I couldn't really hear her because I was screaming or crying or holding my ears. None of it mattered, really. Just meant that I needed to keep going through the fog. I knew nowhere was near,
and that train station had a lot of pigeons to get advice from. I stood at the train station waiting. There were so many pigeons to talk to. One of them told me her name was Amelia, and she had 11 pigeon children, but they didn't talk to her anymore. They all flew away to different places. There was nothing I could do to comfort her. She wouldn't listen to my advice. I was so hungry. The pigeons were generous with their food rations. There were breadcrumbs that they'd been gifted that they shared with me. I was grateful, and I accepted their charity. "Excuse me, miss." A man's voice startled me. "Yes?" "Where is the closest grocery store?" he asked. I didn't know. I didn't know anything.
"I don't know. I don't know anything."
"Do you know your name?" I couldn't remember my name. I decided it was time to name myself, so I decided upon Julia. It was the only name I could remember. There are so many famous Julias to emulate, as I mentioned to you before. Whoever you are you out there listening to this? I know you are, and you care. You care that I find my identity. I know you do.
"Julia," I said, blushing.
"Thank you, Julia," he said, smiling. "I'll look around." And with that, he left the station to search for a potentially mythical grocery store. Night was approaching quickly. There was no train schedule. As you might imagine, I was shocked when the train came zooming into the station. I felt a sense of relief and terror. I knew I needed to leave this place, but I didn't know where Nowhere was and where I would end up. I was disgusted and sick. I was angry and sad, and I didn't know why. I couldn't distinguish between lowercase and capital letters. I couldn't make out what a period or semicolon was. I was writing a book with someone, but I couldn't remember who. The train came to a screeching halt. The conductor stuck his rigid body out of the car and shouted, "All aboard to Nowhere!" I got on and prayed for a new life. I sat in the seat next to the weird elderly man with the dusty hat. I cried and cried. I couldn't stop those tears from coming, even after he told me to put the past away. I couldn't, wouldn't, shouldn't, didn't. It was the book we were supposed to write together, but he'd left me. Wait, who is he? There's a he? I didn't know his name. It was starting to come back to me. I knew there was a man, but I couldn't picture his face or who he was. All I knew was that he shattered me into a million pieces, kind of like Noah's Ark. Did that even happen? Did Noah's Ark shatter? I don't know. I closed my eyes and tried to imagine his face, this man who'd taken everything from me. I couldn't get there. Softly, slowly, easily, I fell asleep. The train was slow and steady on the way to Nowhere. It was a relief to rest my eyes and my soul. I missed him, whoever he was. He was somehow a part of me. I shot awake. The train slowed. We were approaching the station. The destination. Nowhere. I couldn't waste any more time. It was time to find out who I was. I wasn't even hungry anymore. My soul had been replenished by the sleep. I stood up quickly and ran to the doors of the train. I tapped my foot impatiently, waiting for them to open. "What are you doing?" asked the elderly man grumpily. "I want to get out. I want to find out who I am," I said. "You know who you are, Louise," he said. "Put the past away," he shouted at me. My name hit me hard in the face. I was Louise, not Julia. And he knew it. He knew who I was. As I was beginning to recover from the shock of being told who I truly was, the train doors opened. I stepped out into the daylight, and there he was, standing there. He had blonde, sandy hair and a subtle smile. I knew him. He'd broken me. He'd torn my heart to shreds in the woods. I walked towards him, transfixed by his gaze. He was standing under the platform inside of the station at Nowhere. "Hello," he said. "Fuck you," I responded. "All right, I deserve that," he responded. "You told me to forget myself," I said, with tears welling up in my eyes. "Louise," he said, biting his lip. "I'm sorry, but I was afraid."
"Of what?"
I demanded.
Of loving you. He took his hand and stroked my face.
Why? I asked. Am I scary?
No, he said with a laugh. But hurting you is.
He looked deep into my eyes. He brushed my hair away from my eyes and kissed me deeply on the mouth.
I love you, he said.
My name is Ian.
Hi, Ian, I said, with a small smile.
The pigeons looked at us like we had some food to give them. I didn't have anything, and I felt guilty. They'd been so kind to me. They had looked after me when I had been lost myself. Those pigeons knew who I was more than I did. It was clear that I couldn't lose myself again. Not now. Not ever.
I love you, Ian, but you will never take my identity away again, I said.
I won't, he said. The pigeons looked at me. They looked, and they didn't know what was next for us. So we stood there staring into each other's eyes. Because this was my happy ending. Or not. I wasn't sure. But I knew for sure that there was one thing that I could never do again. Be Julia. I was Louise. I could eat more than bread. I would be more than a stranger. I would never lose myself in hurt or anger again. Or maybe I would, because life is like that sometimes. So, this is my story. And this is nowhere. I hope you find a pigeon you can talk to sometime. They always know the answers. The end.